I'd like to know, have some colleagues who would like to engage. Okay, I note the hand of Honorable Kubiya, Honorable Boshoff. Claire Busetti, kindly mute yourself. Well, I've muted you now, but kindly ensure that your device does not unmute itself. All right, I've noted the hand of Honorable Mahlatsi. Okay, colleagues, we will allow colleagues now to engage. Honorable Sibia, you may go ahead.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation. From the DG, the DG has said there are 129 identified initiatives that meet the criteria, but I would like to know from which provinces those are 129 identified initiatives. And from the CFO, do we have companies owned by people with disabilities? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sibia, Honorable Boshoff.
Thank you, Honorable Chin, and I also want to thank the department for the presentation. I want to ask the DG on that part in which the demographics of students funded were set out. The category which says blacks, does that mean South African people who are black, or would that include people from other African countries or even America or wherever black people could come from? Or would black mean South African black? That's my only question at this stage. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Boshoff. Honorable Mahlatsi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I've got just three issues to speak to. One is on the performance overview, especially on the unachieved target. I see on the slide where the department indicates the variables. They speak about the process delays. The reason for non-achievement is precisely because of process delays. How do they intend to mitigate this particular challenge? And because it is important to have clear time frames in order to adhere to achievement of targets. Though one is cognizant of the fact that COVID might have been the main contributor, and the fact that some of these targets, if not most of the targets that were not achieved, was precisely because they relied on stakeholder involvement. Given that fact, because if we don't deal with this issue, this is a clear indication that in future, the department will consistently have this challenge of not achieving those particular targets. Now, given the fact that this might be a problem, does the department see a possibility of reducing these targets based on the baselines as per this annual report, which is under review? And if not, do they intend to roll over, or have they done so? Because this is 2021 annual report. Do they intend, have they rolled over those targets to the current financial year? And what would be the financial implications of such? And also, Salom, given the non-achievement of these targets, ordinarily they will also impact on the budget of the department. But I do not see a correlation between the budget itself and the targets achieved or not achieved. If they could just indicate, because in my view, if you have spent 100% of your total budget, you should be able to say we have achieved 100%. But that is not always the case. But it is not clear on the presentation itself if that is the case. On compensation of employees, there is a clear indication from the presentation that critical posts were not filled for obvious reasons of COVID and budget adjustment and budget cuts. I just want to find out, though I've noted that those posts will be filled in the 2021 MTEF period, but what has been the impact of filling of those posts, and have they had a negative impact on the non-achievement of the target? Now, when you look at the CFO's presentation, and there's a slow on the slow spending on goods and services, and part of the non-spending was on training, maintenance of buildings and so forth. But with specific reference to the training, will that not also impact on your service delivery deliverables, given that during that period where we had COVID and there were limitations in terms of movement and so on and so on, employees might not have benefited from the training? And equally, if that is the case, how does the department intend to mitigate this particular issue? And overall, Islam, just to get an indication from the department, having learned lessons from COVID, having noted the challenges that were brought to our shore by COVID and the impact thereof on achievement of targets in the department, how do you intend to move forward? Because unfortunately, we're still in COVID up until now. How do they intend to deliver on all unachieved targets given the COVID issue? But moving forward, how do they intend to mitigate that? Lastly, Slalo, we must commend the department for its ability to adhere to the 30 days payment. It's quite impressive that they are able to achieve this particular target, or I would call it a target, of being able to pay service providers within even with the average days of 15 days is quite commendable, and I want to believe other departments can really learn from DSI. But my main issue is on the relationship, because most of the targets that you see on the presentation or of the department, they rely heavily on the external stakeholders. How do they intend to hold, do they have MOAs or MOUs with the department? Because their inability to achieve these targets based on the external stakeholders will continuously impact the performance of the department. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mashati. Honourable Olivier.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning to everybody. DG, I'm not sure if you were already logged in when we greeted your team. Good morning if you're not in. I think maybe let me begin where Honourable Mashati finished, by congratulating the department for continuing to be an example
of what our government should be paying off all suppliers within 30 days. I think, you know, I do not want to stress the importance of doing so. SMMEs generally struggle, you know, to keep their businesses afloat if they are not paid on time. But the department pays them on time. You see, all of them less than 30 days, some 10 days, 7 days, which is good. You know, it supports SMMEs, and therefore it will be very interesting to see those SMMEs. How many employees do they have out of those employees? Of course, it's not for purposes of this meeting. And how many of those employees were forced to be retrenched? You'll see that those companies that were paid on time by the department kept all their employees in the business, whereas those that come from SMMEs and were not paid on time, they were forced to retrench because the business could not be afloat. So I want to thank the department, and I want to employ on them to continue doing so moving forward. It's not only doing your job, you are saving lives and livelihoods out there. So secondly, obviously, the good audit outcome of the department, we did not expect anything less. I think the professionalism of this team, you know, best testament to you know, the AG's report, best testament to the professionalism of this team. And want to, you know, congratulate you and your team, but continue doing so. Don't drop the ball. I know Robert is the new CFO there, you know, after the previous one went to higher education. Continue doing so. The quality of your financial statements, we do not want misstatements on those things. Continue doing so. Don't drop the ball moving forward. DG, one of your entities dropped the ball on very good record of clean audits. Please assist that entity. We know the problem. It was monies that came from donors which preferred their own personal suppliers to supply or to be given those purchase orders, but they assist them. The AG has already indicated that those things could have been avoided by seeking concurrence from Treasury, so your team must assist. We do not want a situation here where we have you know, a very bad audit, outcome. On finances, CFO, you indicated that you could not spend most of your money, or well, all of your money, spend most. You could not spend all of your money. you are making our job extremely difficult. This portfolio committee has been clear from all political parties concerned that this department is underfunded. And even with that underfunding, you're still not finishing. You know, you if you want to assist us in making sure that, you know, we ask for more money from Treasury to the department, you must finish your money. Of course, you must do it right, you must follow all processes. But if you don't finish it, it becomes a problem. In us asking for more money from Treasury, was they'll say that even the little that we gave you, you are unable to finish it. So if it means we must advertise for posts that are vacant in the department, let's do so, and all of those things. And lastly, have we applied at Treasury to keep the money that was left behind, was left in the coffers for the 2020-2021 financial year, so that we retain it for other purposes? And if we have received a response from Treasury now. Thank you very much. Those were the few things that Generally, just comments and just that one question that would have wanted. I mean, it's very difficult, you know, Chair, to ask the department questions, especially on process like this, because, you know, they're always on point. They always do the right things. And this year, they've even given us a breakdown of black youth, women-owned companies that they've empowered with their businesses, which is good. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Litsie. Just a few questions from my side, or maybe comments as well. Just on semantics, really, DG. When we speak of a decadal plan, I think this committee has, to a great extent, expressed its the fact that we are pleased with the strides we have made in working on the decadal plan. However, I would just like clarity on the semantics. So often we would refer to the decadal plan being a draft decadal plan, which is in the process of being finalized. And part and parcel of doing that work is, for example, the update you gave us with regards to the consultations you are having across departments in relation to budget coordination and just various commitments that we want to see from different departments. So in terms of the language we use in saying it's a draft document or a draft decadal plan, which is in the process of finalization, and the target that then we say we have met in terms of finalizing the decadal plan, are there no particular, from your point of view, are there no particular contradictions with regards to saying we've met that target of finalization and saying we are in the process of finalizing it and therefore it's a draft? It's really semantics, DG. However, I just like your perspective on that particular. With regards to the documentation centers and the delays caused by the finalization of the regulations that you did articulate and give reasoning to, DG, we just want to, of course, stress our concern with regards to that, noting the importance of these documentation centers in promoting and protecting Indigenous knowledge systems in our country, and relating to some of the work that you also shared with us in terms of work that is being done in promoting Indigenous knowledge systems through traditional medicine. And then in relation to, you know, the performance targets that were not achieved, DG has given reasoning to why many of them have not been achieved. However, we must stress, for example, with regards to the 200 black emerging farmers, that particular target not being met, in terms of also the 71 black emerging farmers being the actual target as opposed to the 200 which we had targeted. And one of the reasons being that we did not have those particular supporting documents. And I think in a department like this, DG, where we really do, it's just not something that we would expect to come out of the Department of Science and Innovation for us not to have documentation to support work that is being done. And so we really want to stress the importance of us ensuring that documentation is there to support the amazing work, to support the evidence of the amazing work that is being done by the department, and that it is done timeously. I think from your department, DG, we only expect the best. And then in relation to research development and support, we had targeted that 2,400 PhD students be awarded bursaries annually, and only 303 PhD students were awarded, and DG gave reasoning as to, you know, what took place there. But I mean, in light of the demand for postgraduate funding, this is for us as a committee very concerning. And you know, when we even take it further, DG, to speak to the fact that we want to see an increase of A-rated researchers, an increased representation on who are our A-rated researchers. you know, funding for postgraduate studies like at a PhD level becomes essential in that type of ripple effect that we want to see in that particular transformation, you know, as we want, yeah. So for us, making sure that we meet our targets with regards to funding for postgraduate studies is essential in the long-term goals that we have in terms of transforming the science and innovation space. In relation to socioeconomic partnerships, this concerns DG in terms of us, or the challenge in terms of us not being able to meet this particular target with regards to the lack of capacity on the online system, and you know, those particular IT challenges is a reoccurring particular challenge. And yes, there's some strides that have been made, but we're not meeting that target as quickly as we'd want to meet it. And so that becomes a concern. And maybe the question we should be asking is, what is being done to remedy this? And what support does the department really need for us to be able to achieve this? And then, yeah, I think that's probably my last comment or question to yourself. And then maybe, you know, just from a perspective of presentation, and it really is maybe, you know, one may view it as semantics, we could perhaps consider reviewing the presentation format of the department when it comes to the annual report, in terms of being able to clearly outline the direct targets versus the system targets, in order for us to be able to see the work being done by the department and of course through its entities. But you know, it's something that the department can consider. It's semantics, but it can assist us in better being able to analyze the type of progress we're making in terms of the performance of the department and its entity. But it's something you can really just consider, DG. And lastly, you know, when Honorable Lithia speaks about understanding, considering that there has been a great call for increased funding in for BSI and, you know, its entities. I think for me, a secondary thought that comes to that when Honorable Lithia says that you're asking for, you know, additional funding, but you're not spending it all, an ongoing thought then comes, or a secondary thought then becomes, that when we then speak about wanting additional funding, we need to perhaps have a moment where we sit down as the department entities and the committee to say, what exactly do we want the funding for? And really being able to narrow each thing down to each particular, you know, target that we have. And also being able to clearly indicate what then would be the outcomes or the impact of this particular additional funding. Where exactly do we want it to go? Because we don't want to find ourselves with, you know, now we have the funding, you know, and now we're not really sure what we're using it on, and then this increased underspending. And so in terms of just better planning, I think it would be essential for us to maybe have that conversation amongst ourselves as a department, entities, and of course the committee, as we continue to strive to support the department, its entities, and the sector at large. So those are just a few remarks from members. Comments and questions and recommendations, I think, by and large, came out from the deliberation. So we'll hand over to yourself, DG, and your team to respond, and then hopefully members will have been adequately responded to. Thanks, DG.
Thanks very much, Chair, and thanks to the members on the question. I want to apologize, Honorable Mkatra. I missed the 129 number that was asked by Honorable Speer. I know she was referring to something in the provinces, and I'm not sure which slide she was talking to. Maybe my connection was just bad. If she could repeat the question, I'd really appreciate that.
All right. Honorable Sibia, do you mind just repeating that question for the DG? Okay, DG, we will work towards finding, getting clarity on that particular question. Then we'll send it to your team either on the chat or on WhatsApp. But so in the meantime, maybe you can just go ahead with the other questions and we'll come back to that one at a later stage.
Okay, thank you very much. But also if any one of the DSI team had the question better, they can either send me a WhatsApp or they can respond at the end. And then I'll ask Robert perhaps to pick up a couple of questions on finance. The first one is companies' disabilities breakdown. I think there was a second question from Honorable Sbia. Maybe the Honor wants to quickly respond to the question about the description of blacks in the student category of reporting. And then I don't know if DDG Zwane wants to comment on the first set of questions from Honorable Matlatsi on the challenges that we have referred to in terms of the process delays, ineffectiveness of implementers, as well as target formulation. I'm happy to come back to maybe add, and then we will come back. Maybe I'll respond to the non-achievement of targets vis-a-vis the budget later on. I think Dudu has joined us on the critical post, not feel the impact thereof, and the training as a result that's not happening as a result of the pandemic. I'll respond on the decadal plan consultations. If Fiona could also talk about the comment from Honorable Mkatra on the delays on the regulations. If Dr. Mope briefly wants to talk about the supporting documents for the emerging farmers, and then I'll respond on the postgraduate student demand and the A-rated researchers. Maybe Yona can give a start on that. And then Mr. Patel on the pre-approval for tax incentives and how we intend to eradicate this perennial challenge. And then we take the advice on the consideration for the presentation format as well as the I'll respond to the issue Honorable Mkatra around what do we want the money for and how we can address that process. So maybe let's start with Yona, the CFO, DDG Zwane, HR, and then Mr. Patel, Dr. Morphe.
Good morning, the esteemed members of the portfolio committee. On the question that Honorable Boshoff asked around the category of blacks, I think it's quite clear in terms of the two policy documents that we have that guide us. The formerly ministerial guidelines on postgraduate and now the postgraduate funding policy. In the category that is black, this is South African. In the postgraduate policy, there is a 5% of others. So largely when the reporting on the numbers is within the context of the South African landscape. So it is in reference to South Africans. And those are the guiding documents that define this for us. So that's on the first question that DG asked me to respond to. On the second one from Honorable Mkatwa around the regulations, definitely is being rolled over into this year. The regulations have already been approved by the Minister for public consultations. So we're just waiting on the supply chain to get an agency to conduct the public consultation on the regulations. So we think that we'll be on track in terms of the time of implementing the regulations. I must say, while we're talking about the implementation of the regulations, is that the work that is going on in the bio-innovation on which the DG reported, with including the center with Professor Masavista at the Free State, these are currently observing the provision of the IK Act on benefit sharing and IP management. So we're not waiting for the office to be established in order to implement this. We are already working on the implementation so that the beneficiaries from the communities have already entered into contractual obligations with the entities that are engaged in the exploitation of this indigenous product. So the value chain has definitely been picked up and it's continuing. The third element that the DG has asked me to comment on, it is just fortuitous for us that probably this is coming now around the decline in the postgraduate funding, its impact on the research cohorts, and eventually on the A-rated researchers. We had a meeting on Monday with the NRF. Part of that meeting focused a lot more on the issues of transformation and seeking probably novel ways of making sure that we have a transformed knowledge producers cohort. So amongst things that were raised was how do we look at the A-rated researchers and how do we increase the pool? How do we also enhance the numbers of emerging researchers and all that? And I'm pretty sure that the actual details of the programs are detailed in the NRF presentation that is coming through. But there was an agreement between the DSI and the NRF on the focus on this and exploring the new ways in which we could enhance that. But the important point that was made by Honorable Mukachwa is the link of from postgraduate to researchers to A-rated and eventually to the knowledge production, the products that come out of the system. So we would like to keep that value chain clearly under scrutiny and see where is it that we need to pay more attention to pivot the system towards having more knowledge producers coming from these disadvantaged universities, but also to get a well-balanced male and female research cohort in terms of the system. So we thank you for making the links, and we just want to report back that we are on it as the DSI and the NRF working towards sharpening our tools of how to streamline this pipeline. So thank you, DG. Those are the three areas that you asked me to comment on.
Yes, thanks very much, Yon. CFO?
Thanks, DG. DG, let me touch on the one about the companies of people with disabilities. You know, in the last quarter, we did indicate that we, at the moment, are still struggling. The information that we disaggregate, the one for women, youth, and SMEs, is the information that is built on the system that we are using, the logging system, which we, you know, it was not there in the past, but the National Treasury has the importance of us disaggregating this information. We have engaged them with regard to including people with disabilities. We have also engaged the Department of Women and People with Disabilities to assist. We wanted to find out from them whether they have a system. At the moment, they did not indicate that, but we are engaging National Treasury to ensure that this information for people with disabilities is also included on the system that we're using to procure, so that when we disaggregate this information, we are able to disabilities as well. It is possible that we might have procured from them, but because we are not able to, you know, to disaggregate that information at the moment, we cannot see that. But we are engaging them so that they include them, so that we can be able to do the steps when we are doing the steps for the other areas as well. And then on the issue of us having requested a rollover for the money that we did not spend, yes, Honorable Lizzie, we did. We did request a rollover. Unfortunately, as I've indicated in my presentation, it was not approved. It was declined by the National Treasury. But as I've indicated, the project did not suffer. We managed to reprioritize within our allocated budget, and we were able to continue the work that is required under the Presidential Employment Stimulus Package. DG, I think that these are the only two questions that I'm required to answer. The one is budget correlation and the target. I think DG certainly will respond to that. Thanks, DG.
Okay, no, thanks very much. DG Chizwane, do you want to comment on the issues that I did respond to in terms of the unachieved targets and whether we are planning to drop these indicators and or whether they we want to keep them, however, deal with the challenges that we've picked up. I think that was the issue I thought you'd speak to, and then if you do on the HR issues.
Okay, I'll respond, DG. Thank you. Good morning, honourable members. In terms of the targets that were not achieved, considering that 2020-21 was when we got introduced into the COVID way of living, and depending on whatever level we were at, and then not being able to meet or to be able to fulfill the events that were on our APP, especially around, considering that most of them are centered on events, around events where we had hoped that it would be hybrid meetings and sometimes virtually, but at that time we had not found a way of working. So going forward, we've found a way of working around it. We would not necessarily be dropping those going forward, because as you can see, that is what is key in terms of the communication channel that we need to have with our stakeholders. So we've just managed to find a better way of working, so, and even describing it better in the APP so that they meet the AG's requirements. Rather than saying hybrid, it would be hybrid or virtual, but we are able to reach some of the stakeholders. Maybe the challenge would be around where we need to access outlying areas, and that would maybe something that we need to speak about. In terms of the 21-22 targets, we might still have those, but we have generally tried to work around how things are at the moment, considering COVID communication and everything. The one that was not achieved as a result of target formulation deficiencies, that one is the one where AG also communicated that we ended up resolving the particular target. However, the problem was in the technical indicator descriptors, where there were certain things that had not been recorded as would have been, as they were not recorded as stuff that would be required at the time of audit, and then they were required. However, the farmers were trained. It's just that we could not at the time of audit submit all the documents, because in the descriptor it had not been described as such. It's something that we are working on, and we had also spoken to the Auditor General that next time we would want them to commit to the descriptors as they are. But on our side, we are also tightening that. In terms of the one that he is speaking to, ineffective ness of implementers. That was just an internal process delay as a result of COVID. So it's sorted now, but just after the deadline and going forward, as we getting back into the norm again, it would be easier to meet those targets. So that's it, DG. I'm not sure if I've missed anything else.
Yeah, thanks very much. I just want to perhaps indicate the question that Honorable Mahlatsi asked about lessons learned from COVID, that there were many things at the start of the COVID that we did and that we didn't understand. We think we have adapted and having a range of strategies on how to coexist with the virus. So as DDG Zwane indicated, we wouldn't want to drop the indicators because of reasons that are associated with COVID and their implications to the non-achieved targets, but rather to adapt to make sure that the lessons that we have learned help us to engage better with, if it's information that we need from the implementers, we develop a mechanism on how that would be submitted to the department on time. So we also think that the engagements, which even at the early days of COVID last year, we couldn't have. For an example, there were a number of targets that were not met around the physical meetings. I think the virtual meetings now and the hybrid type meetings also help us to make sure that the lessons that we have learned suggest that we shouldn't drop indicators because of the challenges of COVID. So we'll work on that. Thanks very much, DDG. The HR team led by Dudu will respond to the COE critical posts not being spent and the training issues.
Thank you, DG, and good morning, honorable members. DG, I'd like to start with the training understanding. COVID really affected the rollout of training in the department solely because most service providers weren't ready or they did not have the resources to conduct and continue with the virtual training. We have seen an increase in the number of service providers that are able to do training virtually. And as a result, from the beginning of this year, the department has been able to roll out a number of training interventions. On the understanding on the COE, we currently have quite a number of senior management and critical positions that will be filled in this financial year. The question was the impact that the inability to fill position has on the delivery of the responsibilities. Whilst we are pushing and we realize that the pressure that it may have on other individuals, however, we have in place acting arrangements in the department which have since been able to assist the department to achieve its targets, as well as in some instances we've had to second individuals to critical positions where there was a need for a skill and to make sure that work is flowing. But like I'm saying, we are in the process of filling quite a number of senior positions this year. We have filled a number of positions towards the end of the last financial year as well. Thank you so much, MPG.
Thanks, Dudu. Mr. Patel, on the pre-approval target, now I've been able to get the 129 where it comes from. It's the 129 district development model projects that the DSI has identified in support of the initiative. So maybe you could comment on that and whether we do have the detailed provincial breakdown.
Thanks, DG. I was going to do that because I thought that was where the 129 came from. So let me first thank the committee for the kind of questions. On the 90-day turnaround time, This is, as the chair has correctly highlighted, it's something that we haven't achieved ever since its implementation. Every year, it's a very different reason why something as small as a resignation of, not as small, something as significant as a resignation of one person could have an impact, as an example. And these are not predictable. So each year, we've had a different set of issues that we've confronted and had to deal with. Last year, for example, in the last financial year, we had the kind of critical person was at the center of the R&D tax incentive process, our chief director, Godfrey Mashamba, having resigned in July to take a post at the DPME. He was the chair of the adjudication committee. He was centrally involved in the tax incentive process, and that threw us off a bit in terms of having to then find a new chair of the adjudication committee, et cetera, et cetera. So each year there's been very different reasons. We've been personally averse for different reasons. Like the DG said, you know, COVID came, we didn't want to reduce targets. We've been averse to reduce the 90-day turnaround time because of the signal that it would send to stakeholders. There was a concern and it was affecting the credibility of the tax incentive. So we decided, even if it's a difficult target, to maintain a commitment to a 90-day turnaround time. But over the time, we have made some tweaks to the formulation of the target, and even in terms of the technical indicator descriptor, to provide a better reflection of what is it that we can do in our regard. So you will see, again, this year we're not likely to achieve the target. The initial indications are that we're not likely to do that, but we've made a lot more gains. We now have the online system that's coming into place. But we will also be tweaking the TID and possibly the indicator description in important ways, which we will then be transparent with the portfolio committee when we present our next year's APP so that you can see that. For example, where there's applications that require more incentive is to actually remove them from the basis for how we count the 90-day turnaround time. We can't do that this year because the TID has to apply, but we might change that. So I have been working very closely with the team to look at this and to properly assess where we are in terms of the online system, what will it do, and will it improve certain our abilities to do certain things. A lot more has been working very effectively, like the adjudication committee. We have full commitment from our national treasury colleagues and from SARS. Those meetings now meet regularly, and new applications that come in, we actually are able to process them even in shorter numbers. We will be coming to the portfolio committee with the annual report on the R&D tax incentives, and you'll be able to see that. So I still think from ensuring that we don't send a signal to stakeholders that we want it to reduce, I would still maintain the 90-day turnaround time, but see how we can improve it in significant ways, and then look at issues that have been constraining our abilities to achieve it. But some of it, like I said, when we had a resignation, it was very difficult to predict, and obviously then it takes time. We have not yet filled that position in, so we've accommodated around it by, for example, asking DDG Moefe for support from a staff member from his unit to chair the portfolio committee, and we thank people like that. So we've been adapting all the time, and I think the numbers are close, but not there yet. There's one final issue that we want to raise in relation to this, is that the whole tax incentive will come up for, it has come up for review. There was a sunset clause when we introduced the tax incentives about 20 years ago. That sunset clause is October 2022. It's not us, but the Minister of Finance that can make an announcement around the future of the R&D tax incentive. And we told that this is likely to happen in the budget, the next year's budget speech. We've got a discussion paper out. which basically motivates for the tax incentives to be continued, but it's not yet the final decision. Should the tax incentive not continue, then obviously won't continue beyond September, and then there won't be a need for this target. If it should be continued, if there are changes to the approach, even the pre-approval process is something that may stay, but we can't say will stay. There has been some features around that. So that is the complexity with next year's target. But by and large, we're saying that we'll continue maintaining it and improving it and trying to achieve that. And we're very, very hopeful now that that the service provider we have to help us with the online system has understood what we require, and we're working very closely with them to unpack this. Yeah. On the 129 districts, I think the Honourable Member would remember that we came to the Portfolio Committee to provide a fuller briefing around the DDM. So it's very difficult to give an answer to say how many provinces. It's spread out. I think in a way, the existing project portfolio, which is not a complete list, the 129 was a process that we started to map and to identify projects that we have in the different districts and to build up a what we call a geographical information system. We now have a service provider that we have brought on board to help us with the GIS map. And the idea with the design of the GIS map is that we would be able to provide view-only access to the public, including the portfolio committee, so that people will be able to go into that system and see what are the projects that we have by district. But that's something that will come in the next year or so. In the meantime, we have a very detailed list. We have detailed spreadsheets with the nature of the projects, etc. And those things can be shared, but it's not easy to then say, you know, all of this, so many projects are in the Eastern Cape and in the Western Cape. We have coverage across the country, and I think the last map that we did, there were only about four or five districts where there was no projects, and that's not to say that nothing was happening. It's that we may not have mapped all of the initiatives from DSI and its entities onto the database. Our sense is that we would have almost complete coverage with some initiative or the other. What we're doing now with the district development model, which we presented when we did the detailed briefing around the DDM, is to strengthen the way we do that and to make sure that we're not just having a set of projects, but to make sure that the DSI initiatives that are in a district align with the philosophy of the district development model, and that is that there's one plan for one district, and then to make sure that our initiatives are aligned properly to the one plan. And that's now, for example, I think the president's in Ugu this week, and we have one initiative in that regard, and it's integrated into the one plan for the Eastern Seaboard initiative. So there's a lot of detail around that, DG, and I think what we would do, like we have done, is provide the previous slides which have some of those details. If there's a very specific district or specific municipality following the elections, there's the profiles, we would be able to say yes, we would be able to dig out quite quickly what is our portfolio of initiatives in that municipality or district. But the intention is to, like I said, not just to take the existing projects that we have, but to transition those projects and to make sure that our initiatives in a particular district is aligned to the one plan, and that we have identified four major areas that we can provide value-added support, economic development, service delivery, education and skills, etc. And so we're even mapping the projects against those targets. So I hope that helps in terms of the 129, but it's quite well spread out, and as I had indicated during the DDM presentation, a lot of these are based on different approaches to secure projects, and as increasingly we're using an open call for proposals approach, so that we put it out to municipalities, who then come to us so that we don't necessarily have to determine. That's what we've been doing with the EU-funded project. We've put it out for an open call, and now we're going through the projects that meet the requirement of the call. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Just three quick additions that I'd like to make. I'm aware that we are running out of time. The first issue that was raised by Honorable Matlatsi is the correlation between the 98.4% spent budget and the 87%. I just want to indicate that the correlation is not that simple and direct in terms of you spend 98.4% of the budget and therefore the targets should align. And we can find time and space to explain, because the way that the targets are, yes, the budget is aligned to the targets, but I don't think it's a one-on-one correlation. So that's the point I wanted to make. The second issue that I wanted to briefly discuss is the point raised by yourself, Honorable Chair, around the semantics of the Decadal Plan. When we sent the document for discussion in Cabinet at the end, we were sending a draft document. But when it was captured as the output of the Cabinet meeting, it said it is a decadal plan. So we still have to figure out what this means in terms of then the consultation period and what would happen when those consultations have been finalized. So maybe it should be a case of just publishing the document and the Cabinet endorsing with the commitments that I think we are seeking on the 25th of November. And then the last issue that I wanted to comment on very quickly is the issue of the need to watch underspending at the time when we are seeking for more money. So we take the point by Honorable Mukacha and Honorable Lesia, and we'll continue to try and strive for pushing this number high. And then the issue raised by Honorable Mukacha around, do we know what we need the doubling of the money for? What we would like to propose, Honorable Mukacha, is that when we come and share with you now what would be an endorsed document by the IMC and route to further consultation with the private sector now and civil society, maybe early next year, we will share with you what is emerging. And for us, it's fairly clear what the additional resources would be required for as part of expanding the work that we've been doing as the NSI and to have greater impact. So I'd rather not for today go through the details in the interest of time, but we'll be more than happy to share that with you. I think that covers all of what we asked the Chair, and as I say, I'm cognizant of the time. Thank you very much for the questions.
I think Honorable Chair is not on the platform. It might be load shedding where she is. So Honorable Matlatsi, is your hand an old hand or it's a new one?
It's a new one, Honorable Z. I'm not sure if we are allowed just to make a one quick follow-up.
No,
on
you
the
can't.
Responses that were given by the department.
You can't buy it.
It's just one issue that I wanted to speak to, if time allows us to speak to.
Yeah, you can go ahead. I'll try and get Honorable Mukacha in the meantime. Continue.
All right. Thank you very much, Acting Chair. I just want to find out from the department, in the response in relation to the targets not met, there was an indication about the TID, the technical indicator description, and the fact that the department will be re-looking at its own. I'm raising this thing precisely because if there was a challenge in relation to the interpretation of the TIDs between the department and the Auditor General, it clearly indicates to us that in the next financial year, because they have not been fixed, those TIDs. Does that mean we're going to stick with those challenges even in the coming
financial year precisely because of the interpretation between AG and the department. I just want to get clarity on that, precisely because when you develop your APP, I know I'm being a little bit technical on the matter, precisely because of my own experience as a former public servant. Did the department do its process mapping together with Treasury when it was developing these TIDs? And what is the difference? What is the understanding of AG and the department in as far as these TIDs, whereby now they have to now be relooked and changed to suit the circumstances? I just want to get that clarity from the department. What is it that is a problem in relation to the TIDs? That is my only question. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mashati. Sincerest apologies, colleagues, as I see this issue of innovation. My device, my laptop was telling me about an attacker or a hacker or something like that, so it kicked me out. So I'm just using a different device at the moment. Thank you very much, Honorable Mashati, and thank you, Honorable Lucia, for stepping in there. I also just had one last question, DG. I'm not sure if you had clarified with us with regards to the status of the CFO in the department. And then I also wanted to find out the status with regards to the department's Women Leadership Development Program that has been delayed due to COVID. Have we been able to catch up with regards to that? And then I did ask with regards to the targets on agriculture and the verification of documents that weren't available. I don't know if we had alluded to how we're going to mitigate that going into the future to make sure that the documents are available to support evidence of the work that we have done. Just those follow-ups kindly, DG.
Thanks, Chair. I will try and do them quickly. The TIDs, Honorable McCarthy, there is no problem with the TIDs. We agree on the TIDs. The documents get sent to DPME. The documents get sent to the AG. They get signed off on the basis of the TIDs that are there. What we have a problem with is when the agreed interpretation of the TIDs during the audit process start to be understood differently by the auditors. And the auditors, if they are here, they know that we've raised this issue, that you can't raise in the middle of that particular year a different interpretation of the TIDs. So we have agreed with the auditors that that's the practice that should be agreed to, and that you cannot, in the audit stage, start to raise issues which you had signed off in the beginning. So that problem, we think, is resolved. It was, I think, second time that on the area that was identified for audit in the performance of information, this happened. So we have agreed with the auditors that we need to lock these agreements and make sure that they don't change. The CFO position has been advertised, Honorable Katron. On the Women Development Program, Dudu indicated that this is now up and running, at least within the COVID agreed and available training program. And then on the agriculture, DDG Zwane indicated that at the time of the information, and maybe Dr. Mope can just 1 minute, indicate that we were worried about not having the information, and we addressed that with the implementer, but I think systemically as well within the planning unit, this is being addressed to make sure that the implementers are clearly aware of what additional information as proof is required. Dr. Mope, are you able in 1 minute to add anything? Thank you.
Thanks, DG. Very quickly, and I think the issue has somehow been highlighted by the SSG. The issue is that the information was going to be available had we been told in time what is required. So we had agreed in the beginning of the year how we are going to report, and we submitted all the documentation in May. However, in August, the AG then said they wanted the information in a particular manner. And we were going to try and get it, but then there was no time because they said they wanted it the same day or the following day. So we have sorted that out, as agreed the DG has indicated that. When we have signed off the TIDs, the AG must not come and require information that is outside of the TID. And that's really what the issue was. So on the basis of how the AG wanted the information, we were only able to provide for that 71 because for the rest, we had to call in our implementing partners, and due to COVID, some of them we couldn't find them in their offices, and then we couldn't meet the deadline that they wanted us to submit the information. So that's the situation. So we are confident that going forward, and on the agreed approach, that the target will be met.
Thanks, Honorable Mkatsa.
Thank you very much, TG, and thank you very much to all the colleagues from the Department of Science and Innovation. I actually, on a lighter note, wanted to say we're glad that you, if Honorable Lidliye were to render any particular services to you, you will ensure that he's paid within the necessary time. However, we know that Honorable Lidliye would not render a service to yourself and get an additional income from government, but we're glad to hear that, and thank you so much, DG. The work of the department continues to be inspiring, and we're glad that at least in terms of recording and reporting and our finances, we're not doing too bad, to be honest. We can do better where we are noticing a few shortfalls. No one can ever be perfect. There must always be room for improvement, particularly because of, you know, what we want to see happen through this particular department. So I also want to just acknowledge the apology from the Deputy Minister, Manamela. I think it's only fair that it also be officially recorded in the meeting. The Deputy Minister, Manamela, will not be part of us as he is on a presidential visit to Ugu District in KwaZulu-Natal as a national champion for the Ugu District development model. So that is why the DM, Buti Manamela, has not joined us this morning. We'll now be moving on to the presentation of the annual report from the National Research Foundation, which is led by the chairperson of the board, Dr. Nompumelelo Obogo, as well as the CEO, Dr. Fulfelo Nelamondo. The reason why I can speak so passionately about P-rated and R-rated and why it's important for
apologies, colleagues. I think, as earlier indicated, Honorable Mkatsa is having network issues or cyber security issues. The NRF, until Honorable Mkatsa comes in, I think you can continue, Obogo.
Thank you very much, Honorable Lidliye. Good morning to the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, the DG, and officials of DSI. Thank you for this opportunity. This morning, I'm joined by fellow board members. We have Professor Musweta, Professor Mafuya Paswana, Ms. Claire Busetti, Ms. Pauli Klape, and Mr. Ronnie Luisi, as well as Professor Sina, who are able to join us. And of course, the
CEO, Dr. Nola Mando, as well as the corporate executive team that will take us through the presentation.
Apologies for that, colleagues. Okay. I'm so sorry, Dr. Opoka. I do not know what's happening. I'm going to, while you're presenting, I'm going to try to figure it out because it keeps on speaking to a security issue. So I wish Honorable Lucia was here with me to come and assist me with the challenge I'm having. I'm sorry to interrupt you there as you were making your opening remarks. But essentially what I was trying to get to was that through that experience of handing over the awards at your award ceremony, I think by and large, you know, colleagues were already aware of the fact that I'd be concerned with the makeup in terms of representation of who the awards were being presented to. It's too lily white, it's too masculine, it's a boys choir. And so we need to ensure that, you know, we do support a very diverse collective of South Africans to ensure that you know, even in how our A-rated conglomerate of researchers looks like is representative of our country. So I vote, and thank you so much with your opening remarks. You may continue, Doc.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you so much for raising those issues. Yes, we did have a brief conversation, and we are really, really appreciate those inputs, which are issues that we take seriously as the board. And I think as we engage also with the CEO, we will make sure that going forward, as we have seen with the new cohort of emerging researchers, that we have quite a good number of young, black, and you know, female emerging researchers that are coming up through the pipeline. So indeed, these are issues that we are taking seriously, and I think in a matter of, you know, a few years to come, we will see a different representation altogether. So Chairperson, just as part of the opening remarks, we wanted just to say that, you know, from an NRF perspective, we seek to be South Africa's premier enabler of research for a better society, and then that we will achieve this outcome through the four pillars that are in our 2025 strategy, which encompasses transformation, impact, excellence, and sustainability. So we are thus very pleased of this opportunity to present the 2020-2021 NRF Annual Report, and the presentation will be delivered by the CEO, where he'll highlight the performance of NRF over the past financial year. And again, Chair, I would like to take this opportunity on behalf of the board and executive management really to thank you for gracing the NRF Awards with your presence and participation. So we really thank all the support also from the portfolio committee. Thank you. Now I'll hand over to the CEO to take us through the presentation. CEO, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson of the NRF Board. Good morning, members of the portfolio committee and the Honorable Chair. Let me just share the screen so that I can start sharing my slides. Can I just check if my presentation is visible?
That's good.
Just one second.
If you can go to display settings, CEO. And then, yeah, that option, the first one.
any grounds for thinking that de Klerk represents a change in policy. I think one can even see it from the point, from the way he's even constituted his cabinet. It's the old, it's the old hands, the old captains of the apartheid system that are there. And in the practice, he has actually done nothing to show any.
Honestly, I hate it. Every time I stand on a platform, the majority are killing people. You know, in this.
I hope this is better now.
That's much clearer, I feel. Thank you.
Thank you. The picture that you see here as I start the presentation was chosen deliberately, and I think it talks to the key issues that we've been talking about since the presentation this morning. This is the picture that we use as the cover page for our annual report for this year. And what it shows is a harsh reality that a number of our people still face in what we call home when they have to come back and live within these kind of conditions. Within ourselves as the NRF, we have put it upon ourselves in line with our tagline of advancing knowledge, transforming lives, and inspiring a nation. By advancing what is globally relevant but locally impactful research so that we can assist in improving the quality of lives of these South Africans. In this context, Honorable Chair, we have a big mission of ensuring that the NSI system as a whole transforms. And that's not an easy job. It's a job that requires us to make very strategic moves. It requires us to look into those big wins that are going to shift the system, as opposed to focusing on small little things that may not do much for our society in the long term. So I would like the honorable members to engage with this presentation with that context of where we come from and what we are trying to do in the bigger picture, as opposed to the small elements of course, the annual performance, which is critical. My slides are not moving. Okay. Let me just check if my slides moved on your side. I'm having some technical issues here. Can you see the next slide? Slide 2?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. So my presentation will have the 5 elements. The first part is that I'll just give a very shallow overview of the NRF strategic plan, and the percentage of women looks smaller. But again, it has to be understood in context from the leadership point of view. Some of the elements of our organization are in areas that are very, perhaps not very popular. If you think of astronomy, for example, it would be very difficult to find women astronomers in this day and age. So even the target that you see at 38% on the leadership element, it's a stretching target given what we have in the context. And I would like the honorable member to look at this with that context. The outcomes that we are chasing in this regard, the first outcome is about a transformed, internationally competitive and sustainable research workforce. And we have made progress, or we're making progress towards this. For the first time, we had the implementation of the DSI and other post-graduate funding policy, which is based on the full course of study and the partial course of study as well. But the key aspect of this is that we are trying to push academic excellence, which will contribute to improving the throughput rates of students. Because until this is done correctly, we are not going to have the profile of researchers that will be changing. Of course, looking into these, we have the guidelines that talk about how the funding is going to be led from the designated groups, 90% black, 55% women, and so on. And this is something that we are not taking lightly, and we're pushing this, very, very, very seriously. When you look into the current profile of the NRF supported graduates, it is currently 76% black and 57% women students. And you will see the graph on the right indicating the demographic breakdown. If you look into the profile of NRF-funded researchers producing research outputs, again, moving it towards the element of excellence, you can see how we are transforming the system. We are constantly monitoring the adequacy of the research funding and the financial sustainability and the quality of the support to ensure that researchers become more productive so that we can push the excellence element. Currently, if you look at the profile, we have 41% being black and 38% being women. This is as a ratio of the publications that are on the web of science. And again, you can see the picture in terms of how the profile of NRF supported authors was during the year 2020. When you look into what you have here, again, this is in relation to the second outcome, which is about enhancing the impact of the research enterprise. There's a lot of work that needs to be done here, but the key aspect is entrenchment of knowledge and societal impact in excellent research, which is supported by the NRF. We are focusing on exploring mechanisms for enhancing the developmental impact of publicly funded research. And of course, there's a lot of work that comes with this in alignment with the DSI white paper on the science, technology, and innovation, and the dedicated plan that we spoke about in the presentation by the DSI. If you look at what you have here again, in line with our mandate, we're supposed to support all domains of science. Some members here will be happy to see how the conceptualization of research infrastructure platforms for the social sciences and the humanities domain got initiated and now is being advanced. Of course, we are very mindful of the equitable resourcing of the research and the innovation across all science domains. If you look at the pie chart on the right, you could see certain areas that may need attention in the next few years. If you look at how the balance is, and maybe if you just point to one, you can see that maybe our support to the computer information science is about 2%, whereas certain areas would be 30% in the biological and the chemical sciences, and 6% in the agriculture. Probably we need to look into this and say, how do we actually balance or rebalance these to the in line with the development in the technology and the areas that we think the country is going. So again, we also don't just want to be the need to, we want to be pushing the world leadership. We need to actually be setting the direction for the world. So in this regard, honorable members, I think there's a lot of work again, but this gives you a distribution of the sectors by various domains. One other issue that we did an evidence-based decision-making platform that we are developing called the Research and Development Information Platform. And the key aspect here is, again, being in the knowledge economy, we need to actually have data that's available that can enhance decision-making in various elements. If the government or any other place, we should then be able to find data readily available that can be analyzed, can be synthesized, and help in and that's one of the things that we are pushing. In terms of the enhancement of, and in terms of the outcome number three, enhanced impact of science engagement, a critical aspect is the creation of the fit for purpose capability for science engagement. And the NRF embarks on an organizational development project to create a fit for purpose science engagement capability. The science engagement element, as we have learned during this pandemic, we found a lot of people becoming experts or engaging with science, maybe because we were all affected by the pandemic, we didn't really know which truth to collect or which one to believe in. But it's a very critical aspect again for the NRF to drive the idea of actually creating a community that can be engaged. And this is covered in our Engage research framework. The other thing that we did, for instance, the DSI and the National Youth Science Program, a mentorship framework, which has been developed, Of course, because of the COVID during the year, a few things might not have been done. We had limited engagements because of the audience and not being able to meet as we normally would do. The last outcome, a transformed organizational leaders, they lose, I think I spoke to this, funding scheme, which resulted in a significant reduction of in the number of researchers that were receiving funding from the NRF. So in the past, when we still had money, we say anyone who's rated, automatically you receive a particular funding amount, but this has since been stopped, and that then means we are supporting less people as well. Program two. I just want to give this highlight here. We had to adjust very quickly to issues of COVID and offer our service seamlessly, regardless. And we started having the public enjoying virtual tours of our astronomical infrastructure. We had to create the e-learning platforms that were launched for continuous learning. We had to work with the youth science journalists in turns who got training. And the whole idea here was to ensure that during the time of COVID, people can receive news that are correct from well-trained journalists in their own language. And that's something that we did. And we are very proud of that. We had to increase the awareness of science. We had to engage with the public on the research behind the ventilator project, which I'm going to talk about in a short while. And we had to do to produce factually correct COVID-19 related science news articles. Again, just to ensure that the public can consume correct information. If you look into program three, the OR Tambo African Researchers were launched, and the DG covered this in his presentation. The key part here, honorable members, maybe I need to emphasize this aspect, is that we are also aware that as much as we are within South Africa, if Africa is not working, things are not going to work. So it makes more sense for us to step our mandate, looking at our neighborhood as well and getting where there's excellence and saying, can we support that excellence so that it can support us in turn? And this is the spirit within which the OR Tambo chairs are established. We also had to establish, I mentioned this earlier, the postgraduate funding policy, not established, but implemented, again, driving the access, success, and throughput, with the whole idea here was to ensure that we have a pipeline that is transforming, that is well-supported, which has access to the finances, that has equity of opportunity, and that is representative. Program four, I'm not going to spend time here. This just summarizes and this talks to the national infrastructures. Some of the projects that you see here are projects that, in my view, are very, very important, and I think we need to actually have much more or many more similar kind of projects nationwide. On the left-hand side, the first one is the South African Infrastructure Roadmap, the Expanded Freshwater Terrestrial Environmental Observatory Network, and the Shallow Marine and Coastal Research Infrastructure, which are progressing very well. So this is something that we are managing, and we are happy with the progress that is that one has made. The building of the South African Polar Research Infrastructure was also awarded to our South African Environmental Observation Network, and the execution is underway. If you look at what you see in the second one is the Meerkat extension, where we are adding further 20 receivers to the current 64 receivers that we have. The key part, honorable members, again here, is very important to emphasize the point that when you're doing science like this, when we're looking into the sky, and I won't bore you with the science, but I can tell you that the very science that we use to look into the sky is the very same science that you can use to look into your brain. In mathematical terms, we are sort of solving the very same differential equation that just differ by the boundary conditions that you're using. And it is from this program that the National Ventilator Project came into being. We have to now say, we understand how to build telescopes, but can we use the very same skills that we have, the engineering capabilities that we have in a telescope, to build the ventilators once South Africa does not have ventilators? So this is something that I think people have to have that context, that while you're looking into the sky, it's not just about the sky, it's about building the capacity that the nation requires for other things. And in terms of needs, that capacity can be available. If you look at the one that you see on the side, the maximum efficient spectrograph, this was a project that was established at our South African Large Telescope for the rapid identification and follow-up of transient events. Again, the project has developed, has moved very well. The one that you see on the right, the South African Isotope Facility, this project has taken off with the procurement and the delivery of the 70 MeV cyclotron, which I'm told that it has now reached it should be in the ship now, if it has not reached our shores. Again, this is a technology that, by having this technology, not only will we do good science, but automatically we can then start creating a big pipeline of radioisotopes that we can actually sell for cancer treatment in South Africa, in Africa, and the rest of the world. So it's not just an issue of just doing science, but science that is relevant, that's going to make impact. And we are busy with this building. We are hoping that soon we should be able to call honorable members during the launch and cut the ribbon. But the key aspect here again is it's not just infrastructure that's being pushed for the sake of infrastructure. It's science infrastructure that makes scientific sense, but also that makes that's going to make impact to people's lives. Moving on, our response to COVID-19, we did quite a lot. I'm not going to spend time here. I will take it as a read. But we had to move faster into online platforms. We had to deploy high-end projects and engineering skills, etc., to assist in the coordination of the development of the national ventilator project that I spoke about. We had to implement the COVID-19 Africa Rapid Grant with international partners, which resulted in us attracting some foreign income, but importantly, allowing us to partner with some of our African countries to develop solutions in response to COVID-19. COVID-19 South African dashboard was developed, and again, we had partnerships with various, eTemba labs with VETS. We had to work with Rhodes University at the time, again, when there was no sanitizers. There was a time that sanitizers ran short. And we had to use our skills and our understanding of working with alcohol and so on in the fish space to then say, how do we use this to assist South Africa in getting sanitizers? So again, we have learned very fast to repurpose some of the science that is happening for the betterment of our community. If you look at this, I'm not going to spend time, I spoke about this. This is just a picture of the ventilator that we spoke about, where we use the capacity from astronomy to manage and to manufacture the 20,000 ventilators, again, with partnerships with other entities. The CSIR was part of the project and others. The key part is we can actually use the science that we have from one area and apply it to the other. Some of the highlights, the minister launched not so long ago, last month, the Kofimbaba Science Center. And the role that the NRF played in that regard was we provided the science engagement material, we placed volunteers at the center as part of the National Youth Service Program, we trained the staff of the center, among others. Again, we're not just doing the science, we are saying, let's use the science in a manner that is relevant, that's going to make an impact. A total of the 80 projects across 17 African countries were selected for funding under the COVID-19 Africa Rapid Grant. And you can imagine the complexity of dealing with 80 projects across the continent. But again, it was an issue of how do we reposition our strong understanding of managing a science system such that we can also have benefits from people who are sitting outside of South Africa. Some of the highlights here will move very fast. If you look at Dr. Rakhwasha became the first black South African woman to get a PhD in physical oceanography. This is something that talks about our intent to transform the city. Of course, we need much more. We need to do much more. But this is something that we are doing. You see Dr. Ndabeni on the other side, who's the joint of teaching the eTemba Labs and the UCT physics research. And their focus is on fast neutron physics, something that, generally in the past, you not find a lot of women getting into this kind of field. And now we're excited to sort of see these results where you see women getting into exciting areas of science. And this is the way that we'll be able to then change the profile of the A-rated specials that we spoke about, of course, with time. I'm going to jump into the financial overview, which is the last section of my presentation. Here, I'm just going to give the financial performance at end of the financial year. I will share the income, the expenditure, and some of the key ratios, and I will talk about the governance and the audit outcomes. I think the AG is still in the room, and the shares our performance in the audit, but I will just share some of those. So if you look at the slide here, one particular issue that is very important, honorable members, is that it seems very clear that the NRF is underfunded. There's no doubt about it. Given the role that we play in the society in South Africa, the issue of funding remains small, remains a big challenge because we have a small amount of funding. So if you look at our funding for the year, you can see, I won't read the numbers, but the key thing that you can see from this slide is the fact that all the money that we have, we use because we finance the city. So we don't actually keep the money on our side. That's why the accumulated surplus is very small, just 3 million. If you look at the statements on financial position and you look at our current assets, I think the picture that you can see there is that we have a good picture. I think that's one thing that you can just take as a take home in this aspect with a positive net asset. On the cash flow side, again, we have a positive picture, although last year we had a decrease in cash and cash equivalent, which the net decrease was like 28 million rand, but this is as a result of the reduction in funding, which I'm going to show in the next few slides as well. So here is the financial overview, and I just want to show you some trends. The first part, honorable members, if you look at the parliamentary grants, which is the first block on your left, it has been fairly stable, but it's very small, not crossing the 1 billion mark. With the bulk of our income coming from the contracts that come from the DSI, and we then have other contract income that will come from other areas. Here you might see an anomaly in the third element in the year 2018, which was due to the carry forwards from the previous year. But if you look at the overall picture of the financial overview, if you look at the last set of bar graphs, you can see an income that's sort of increasing over the last 5 or so years, which is anomaly in 2018. Where there was a rise, but it wasn't an anomaly which I can talk to. So the key part is that, again, you can see a picture of a funding of the NRF that is in decline, which will be a concern given the role that we play in the system. On the expenditure side, I'm not going to spend time. I mentioned the issue that all the money that we get, so we spend, because we are a service-oriented function, we have to give it to the researchers, we need to build the infrastructure, and so on. But the key part here is that we have had a reduction in certain areas. Our operating expenditure has been, we have a stable trend year on year. Of course, 2021, or this year that ended now in March, COVID-19 impacted the travel and the conferences, which affected travel in certain areas. But in the main, this is the picture that we have. If I just touch on the key ratios here, I think, as I've mentioned, you can see that our assets level, I think, is a good picture. But one should be concerned about the asset sustainability ratio. Generally, you want this ratio to be around 1. And basically what it means, just to assist maybe members, is that it talks about how you are replacing your assets as they reach their end of life. So basically, the ratio between your assets replacements figure, how much money you're spending on replacing assets versus depreciation. If you look at the figure being 0.7 over the last 2 years, 0.73, 0.21, it basically means that you have assets that are becoming older and we're not replacing them at the right pace. Again, it's a financial issue which I think needs to be addressed. I'm not going to touch on the other ones. Maybe one other issue is looking at the parliamentary grant as a total, as a percentage of income, that's sitting at about 24%. I think that is very low, and it's something that affects how we can transform the system that we need to do. I think the rest are self-explanatory, and I'm not going to get into the details now. On the audit aspects, I will just touch on one that we have an unqualified audit with a clean audit award. We do have a good internal controls within the organization, and this is the line that came from the AG. We have a healthy going concern position, and there was a small, I mean, we do have a fruitless and wasteful expenditure. There was an irregular expenditure of 12 million rand, which was something that, you know, could have been managed better, but we did get full value for money for the service that was received. We should have just received an authorization from National Treasury, which was not done. But all in all, our picture looks positive. My last slide, just looking into the current and the future outlook. I did mention, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we have a lot of work to transform the system. We really have to work together with various legs and various arms with our line department to ensure that the system changes. We continue advancing knowledge, transforming lives, and driving the nation. So at the moment, we are continuing our work on the impact of publicly funded research. It has to make impact. Without that, the system is not going to change. And this is the reason why we have developed, or we're busy working with our line department in the development of the research impact assessment framework. We can say we are only going to find research that we can see how it's going to make impact. We are optimizing the efficiencies and the gains made in the machine internally, our enterprise resource planning system, so that we are efficient. If we're not efficient, things are not going to move fast, and we want our internal environment to be efficient so that we can service the system better. We are redirecting the organization towards an increased emphasis on supporting innovation. In line with the change of our department from science and technology, science and innovation, and we see this as something that we need to drive you know, with all our money. Innovation is a critical aspect, and we need to focus on it. We are optimizing the organizational performance through the culture change, and the focus is on the quality and efficiency. And one of the other issues that we are looking at, amongst many, is establishment of either an institute or something. It could be a center that we look into how ready, how prepared are we to deal with pandemic. Because this COVID-19 taught us that maybe it found us not ready, but we need to be ready. It might appear that we're entering a world or an era of pandemic. We just don't know what the next pandemic is going to be. So we are looking into a number of these aspects. But most importantly, we need your support in transforming the system, the national science system, the national system of innovation. Thank you very much, Honorable Member.
Thank you very much, CEO, for that presentation. I'd like to note hands of members I would like to engage on the presentation from the NRF. Can I note hands, please? Chair, I see you. Oh, no, that's CEO. You still have your mic and device open. Okay. Honorable Sibiya. Honorable Boshoff. Honorable Mahlatsi. Okay, I'll note those hands in the meantime. Honorable CBA, may we continue?
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation. I only to appreciate the good work they have done. Yo, none of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Yo, no audit findings. I thank you, Chairperson. I don't have any questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable
Thank you, Honorable Sibiya. Honorable Boshos.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I also want to commend the NIF on this good report. And I'm not going to respond to everything I found interesting or whatever. I just have a question on Program 4 regarding the infrastructure projects. Please excuse me if I'm asking something which is obvious or which everybody knows, but these different projects, are they located within the NRF itself, or does the NRF cooperate with some institution within the department? I'm specifically thinking of the East South African Isotope Facility. Is it located within NEXA, or is it located within the NRF? And likewise for the other programs, initiatives that were listed. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Boshoff. Honorable Matati.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me welcome the presentation by NRF. But I would like to start my input from the AG's report. AG referred to the top 1.9 million that was classified as irregular expenditure, primarily because of non-compliance in relation to contracts. I just want to find out from NRF, what contracts are these? What necessitated them? What has NRF done to deal with the issue of the irregular expenditure? Is there an action plan in place to deal with the irregular expenditure, and what is progress thereof? I take note of the CEO's input that there was value for money for this particular irregular expenditure, but it can't be that we become just laissez faire in as far as the process of following regulations within government entities or government generally. The fact that there's value for money does not necessarily warrant any institution to just do as they wish without getting prior approval. I think systems are there for a purpose, and irrespective of whether there was value for money, we must follow systems that are there, because they're meant to analyze and assess our finances and performance of entities. So the statement, I find it very, you know, as a concern for me, for a CEO of NRF to just say there's little for money though there was this, you know, I find it very as a concern. Let me just put it that way. Now, when you look at the review on finance and performance, AG also indicates that NRF is not doing well in terms of systems and controls within the institution so that we do not have irregular expenditures. When you look at slide 3, slalom, it speaks to the mandate of NRF. But when you go down to slide 8, there is no clear translation of its mandate in as far as demographics are concerned. And I think this is a concern that you attributed to in your opening remarks in as far as the awards that they were conferring to participants, to say the demographics are still not speaking to the South African population. Do they see NRF being on par in terms of the transformative agenda of the country? Even when you go to slide 6, when you check their 5-year target, this is a clear indication that there is a slow pace in as far as the transformation at NRS, and it's quite a concern. And I want to take this question to the chair of the board, whether, I'm sorry to put the chair on the spot, but whether is she happy with the transformative agenda of the NRF? Passing that question, going to slide 10. Carlos, slide 10 speaks about the research that has been funded by NRF. When you look at agriculture, it's only 6% of the funded research that is displayed before us. In my view, what informs these percentages? Because when you look at agriculture and manufacturing, these are the key economic drivers, and they're going to remain like that in this decade and the next decade. Precisely because of the deliberate intention of government in as far as industrialization is concerned. Now, when you give 6% to agriculture, it is a concern. It says to me, we are not moving in par with what the trajectory that government is moving towards in as far as economic drivers are concerned. And I'm saying this because, Carlo, in the second quarter of 2020, when we were in a hard lockdown, agriculture as a sector was the only sector that did very well in as far as GDP. Now, when NRF being a strategic entity that must help us with research, focuses, give 6% to agriculture, it's quite a concern. My last part is on the deviations from the plan target. There's a clear indication that NRF did not achieve all its targets. The same as I raise a concern with the department, what do they intend to do in making sure they meet their plan targets? And in the presentation, there is no clear indication, Kuti, why have they not why are they these variables? Why have they have not achieved the plan targets as per their APP? And how do they intend to achieve them? And also, much as I take note of what DG has indicated in terms of correlation, and I think I agree with him to a large extent, but there should be an explanation to say, in terms of, you can't spend 100% of your budget and have 50% of plan targets, although they are not they are interrelated, those issues, but there is no individual monetary value on individual targets. I understand that logic, but at least there must be a variable, because when you plan your finances, you plan them in line with your plan target. Thank you very much, Clark.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mashati. Honorable Itie.
Thank you very much, Chair. A few things. I think one, let's be consistent in congratulating NRF for a good audit outcome. Unqualified with no findings, which is good. Let them continue doing so. Few questions. One, on students that have been supported. And this one I'm asking because I've got intimate knowledge of. There are students that you are not funding fully for their researches for various reasons. Maybe just give us the criteria that you use to determine who gets a full funding and who does not. Others, I know you give them half funding. And then in relation to your bursaries that were awarded, pipeline postgraduate students, PhD and PhD students, NRF reported approximately 11,000 students that were supported in 2020-2021. However, the department confirmed that although this number of students were awarded bursaries, verification information was not available from NRF, hence the department had to record this as a performance and non-achievement in its annual report. what circumstances led to the verification information not being available for the department audit, and what was the information audited to verify the number of student supporters are correct? What actions have you implemented to prevent this reoccurrence in the future? And apologies, I think my sinuses are bad today. And then given the current funding constraints, what alternative funding streams are being considered by NRF? What progress can be reported regarding the policy to expand the resources directly directed to the leading researchers and scholar program? What progress can be reported on the development and implementation of the NRF Research Impact Framework? And then what level and type of support does NRF provide to the 10 OR Tambo research chairs that were launched in the 7 African countries? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mitsuye. I'll hand over back to the NRF to respond to the questions and comments from members. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Maybe before I jump into the questions themselves, let me thank the congratulations that have been echoed by many members, Honorable Silia, Honorable Boshoff, Honorable Pierre. I think that's much appreciated. Before I get into the questions, maybe let me just try to share some additional context here. The science system as a whole is a complex system. I think one has to sort of understand what isn't required when you want to move it into a new direction, transformation, which we are not compromising. But you also don't want to make it fail in the process. For instance, you could have a field that is very critical, but you find that people who are actually studying in that particular field are all sort of a white male, so to say. You cannot just say out of the blue, we're no longer funding these fields, because then basically you can actually affect the field in that particular form to the point that you end up with, crippling it. So we are very much aware, Honorable Members, of all the challenges in the transformation. You can hear it from us, at least, when we say that we are actually transforming the system. We are going to be very determined. We are going to be very focused in changing the system. But one has to do this in a very strategic form, where we don't affect the system negatively. So if I just jump to the questions, and I'll ask some members of my executive team to answer some of the questions. Honorable Boshoff, you asked a very good question. You asked a question about program four in terms of the facilities, where are they located? So the NRF as part of our mandate, we host the national facilities. So the national facilities will be the lights of the South African Radio Astronomy Observatory, which you will know the SKA project in the Karoo. So that facility as a whole is managed by the NRF. Of course, it does two things. Firstly, it provides the infrastructure for the researchers who want to research within that particular area. That's one. But it also performs the research on its own. So this is the element where we also get involved in the research performance itself. So the isotopes that you ask for sit within ETEM Labs, where it is based in Cape Town, and these are the people who do work in the nuclear space. It's not in the same space with NEXA, but we do partner with NEXA strongly. NEXA's isotopes, or rather, NEXA focuses on reactor-based, whereas we are accelerator-based, so it has a different function, but we are providing a research infrastructure in the nuclear space within Cape Town. And the same thing applies to the other national facilities. We'll have a national facility that is more focused on the environment, called South African Environment Observation Network, which is based in Pretoria. So these are the facilities that are managed by the NRF.
but they are there for researchers who are doing research, but also we also do research within those facilities. So I do hope through this chair, Honorable Boshoff, I've clarified your question. If I then jump to Honorable Maslati, there are a few questions that you've asked, and I'll defer some of them to my colleagues. The first one, I will ask the CFO to respond to that in terms of the controls. And maybe let me just ask the CFO to jump in and address that aspect. After which, Dr. Pillay will respond to the distribution, the agriculture, the 6% aspect. And maybe when Dr. Pillay jumps in, I will ask him to also address all the questions that were raised by Honorable EP. So CFO, let me just give you to respond to the audience one.
Thank you, CEO. Thank you, Honorable Chair and members, in particular, Honorable Maslati, for the question. Quite a comprehensive question with various points, and I wish to answer them as follows. With context and obviously balanced perspective, as I am not aware as to how the AG presented the matter, and I do note that the AG is still in the House. With regard to this matter, Chair and members, we provided the AG with a full report. SCM processes allow for various sourcing strategies. With regard to this matter, the NRF acquired access to various scientific databases for an extended one-year period. And what we did is we chose to procure this through a sole supplier deviation method, as these databases are from sole suppliers. The AG was of the view that stock should have been procured through a variation method, as we had a five-year contract and the funding and the contract, the expenditure was exhausted in year four for legitimate reasons. And for the fifth year, we needed one more year access. We opted to procure this through a deviation method, and the AG was of the view that it, for the additional 1 year, it should have been a variation method. We subsequently, in procuring this access to these databases, and there were a couple of them, I think about three or four databases, we chose the deviation method and we reported it to National Treasury, of which National Treasury acknowledged. Thus, the response from the CEO that we obtained full value for money without any expenditure being incurred in vain. The only difference would have been that had we gone through a variation method, we would have acquired National Treasury's permission up front. The fact that the NRF chose to pursue this matter through a deviation method means that we bought it and then we informed National Treasury. This difference of opinion, members, was explained to the AG. We also looked at whether we need to pursue this matter legally, because in supply chain, sometimes you have these abnormalities or technicalities that may arise. And our view was that we didn't want to waste further money on legal expenses. And this could have become a protracted matter between the NRF, the AG, and National Treasury. We accepted the final outcome, despite the differences in our opinion. We disclosed it and in our AFS with the full permission and explanation to the NRF board. What we have done in terms of controls, firstly, we have a loss control function in the NRF. This matter has been processed quite thoroughly and comprehensively through that loss control function. We have also submitted the request for the condonation to National Treasury. We await the feedback. Chairperson, we also do not have a laissez-faire attitude with regard to irregular expenditure. As I indicated, this was an anomaly. It was a technical matter that we had a particular perspective and a view on. And Chair, I think the controls, the necessary controls are in place. This matter, as would have been explained to the AG in our comprehensive report is that once we had reached year four of the five-year contract, it is through our internal control mechanisms that we were able to manage this contract and identify the fact that we were going to reach our full contract value in year four and not in year five due to normal business operations. So there's no lack of controls that resulted in this matter. It was a difference of opinion. Chair, I'm sorry that I've given you, given members a full explanation, and I hope this clarifies the matter to the extent of the comprehensive question that came from Honorable Mashlatsi. Thank you, Chair.
Dr. Bidet?
Thank you, CEO. Honorable members, I just want to say thank you very much for your, you know, very informative questions. I will try to provide the answers you seek and a response. Firstly, to Honorable Mashlatsi, I'm going to turn off my camera because of connectivity. Honorable Mashlatsi, you raised the point about the percentage spend on agriculture in particular, 6%. I think the point that I want to make here is that the NRS invests in various knowledge domains, but this is the NRS portion that's spent in those research areas. We have to appreciate that agriculture, there's an entity called the Agricultural Research Council, which funds agricultural research with a different budget. So the 6% you see is not the total spend of the country on agricultural research, rather it is the NRS portion. Now, what you're seeing here is also not the full picture, because this is from the parliamentary grant. There are a number of other contract monies where portions of those monies are spent on different aspects of different knowledge domains. But I think your question is important, and the reason it's important to us is that as we move forward with the DSI white paper on science, technology, and innovation, as well as a decadal plan, one of the key questions that we have to raise is, how do we prioritize research support and which knowledge domain should they be? Where should we stop our investment or curtail our investment for maximum impact and for societal benefit? So I think in the context of that, what I've just said, your question is extremely important. And I hope that honorable members will also provide some stewardship in ensuring the implementation of the decadal plan and the investment in the correct knowledge domain. Then, of course, I think we also need to be aware that in the last budget of the NRS, you know, we've had significant budget cuts in terms of the funds that were needed to deal with the COVID pandemic. So I think we also need to factor how much can we spend and where can we spend it. Honorable Lexi, I was really delighted that you are so close to the action in terms of student support. And I'm delighted that you have raised a number of questions which I will respond to. The DSI NRF student funding policy is very explicit on the criteria for partial cost of study and for full cost of study. There is the part that is what we call financial need, and we work very closely with NSFAS as well as ISFAP in determining the financial need. There are indications as well where there's excellence in the research, and of course that is the cornerstone of our decision making as well. So I want to just indicate to you, I'm quite happy to share the documents with you about who gets full funding and who does not. But we have very strict criteria. 90% of our scholarships go to blacks, and 60% go to women. So those are the guidelines that we use from this policy document, which has been endorsed by the DSI. Now, you did raise the question about postgraduate students, about the circumstances led to not being able to verify numbers, etc. I'd like us to appreciate that the stability at universities in the last 18 months has not been ideal. So as a result, student uptake, the functionality of universities has been interrupted. And we've had difficulty in collating data that we have required because of the slow uptake of bursaries or the non-uptake of bursaries. But we have very good controls in place to ensure that in conversation with the university, that we're not faced with this situation into the future. You also raised the question about, is the NRF looking at alternate funding streams? Yes, we are looking at alternate funding streams. The saddest part for me was this year, where we have thousands of students at the master's and doctoral level who are from designated groups and who qualified for funding, but we were not able to fund them. The board wrote to the Department of Science and Innovation, as well as to the minister, as well as to the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee, to share with you the numbers and the profile of the students that were eligible for support, but that unfortunately we are unable to support. And I think it's an area, Honourable Letsi, seeing that you're so involved in this, I'd like to see you champion this really down the line and into the future. You also asked about the Leading Researchers and Scholars Program. The situation at the moment is that we've shared the framework documents within the corporate executive, with board, with the Research Development Committee, with the DSI, and with the DHET. We've had a number of inputs. That document has now been revised. We have been able to secure partial funding, but we are in conversation with the DSI about funding this program in the future. And I think the DSI needs to have a level of comfort that we are proceeding in the correct direction. This is a very high impact program. It requires a good investment, but this is what will deliver us a transformed workforce of leading researchers into the future. Then, of course, you requested information about the OR Tambo chair. They submit their annual progress report. And I mean, in reality, it's early days. It's a 15-year funding program. We've given funding for the first 5 years. We're now into the third year of that program. So, should you require that information as to what progress has been made and the details of each of the researchers, we will be delighted to share that with you. The question on the progress on research impact, I will refer that to my colleague, Dr. Katiba Matutu, who will give you an update on that particular initiative. Thank you, honorable members.
Dr. Matutu, the impact.
Okay, I'm not sure whether it's muted, but let me give you an update, a quick update. So,
sorry, Chair. A whole lot of windows which were open. Thank you very much for that question, Honorable Lesnia. We have developed an impact framework as the department. As the NRF, we've shared it with the community, the university community, the Science Council's community, the Department of Science and Innovation, and following that, it was approved by our board in July. So we have that document. We've sent it also to this committee, because it was requested by the chair of the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee. And we are busy now drafting the implementation plan of that impact framework. And the intention is very simple, that whatever we do, our act changed. And in changing it, there was a focus on national development in all our mandate areas. So that then had a spin-off effect on our strategy and our vision, that whatever we do, it has to be research for a better society. So in that context, then, whatever we do in terms of research, in terms of human capacity development, in terms of science engagement, has to lead to national development or a better society. So we are in the process now of developing an implementation plan for that impact framework. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Matutu. From Honorable Matlasi, there was also a question that was asked directly to the chair of the board. Dr. Oboko, can I please ask you to respond to that?
Yeah, no, thank you very much, CEO. and sent to the members of the portfolio committee for the engagement. I think we really appreciate it. And really the question which was directly asked was whether I'm, as the chair of the board, am I happy with the transformation of the NRF, you know, the targets and so forth. Indeed, perhaps just to indicate to the honourable members, you know, to raise your level of comfort, to say that as a board, I think when we first convened in 2018, our priority was on transformation, transformation, transformation. And I think it's something that we're still, you know, hammering on even up till today. Hence, when you look at the strategy 2025, you know, with those four pillars, which are really, you know, enhancing how we are going to transform the research landscape in South Africa. Transformation is number one. Hence, we've got transformation, we've got excellence, we've got impact, we've got sustainability. So all of those key pillars are interdependent. So you can't have one and not have the other, especially on the issue of sustainability and investment into the research you know, portfolio, as well as, you know, the research endeavors that are being spearheaded by NRF. So hence, when we come to the portfolio committee and we ask for, you know, assistance, especially in terms of having more and adequate investment in some of these strategic portfolios to have this transformation agenda realized, it is indeed because the reality on the ground, and as well as when NRF implements some of these programs, as Dr. Pillay has indicated, we have the need is huge, but what we have in the kitchen does not afford us to really expand and stretch ourselves. And also, I think when you look at those targets as well, we have to set them to be pragmatic, to be realistic. They are based on the baseline. We start with the baseline. That is what informs us in terms of, you know, over the next 5 years, where do we want to be? Hence, you can see with the first, if I may open the slide again, I think the first target was on the postgraduate researchers funded by NRF, you know, to have them at 80%, of course, the women at 55%. So all of this is also informed by the trends, by the data that we have. Because we can set ourselves unrealistic targets and we'll come to the portfolio committee and we'll still get, you know, a slashing that, oh, you've set yourself but you cannot achieve. So also this is also informed by the investments that we have from the portfolio, from the parliamentary grant, but also what we are receiving from our mother department in terms of, you know, helping us to fund some of these key research initiatives. So indeed, we appreciate this engagement. We are all on the same page in terms of, you know, ensuring that we transform the research landscape in South Africa. And I think now with our new CEO at the helm, these are issues that he has taken on board. It's issues that really are, you know, on top of his agenda as well. So I think we are in a good space and a good time. I think by next year when we come back, especially now that we're developing our new APP for the next financial year, we'll be able to see, you know, how to maneuver and how then we get assistance. Because really, as the chair of the portfolio committee has indicated, that without science and innovation, I think as a country, we'll really miss the opportunity to advance, because it's also through these innovative solutions that we can also be more competitive and assist the whole country in terms of job creation, the triple challenges that are all facing us in terms of unemployment and poverty. So we really appreciate this opportunity, but indeed, be rest assured that these are issues that are really on top of our, which are prioritized by the board, and we will come back really with a different story. As I indicated also during the opening remarks, that as we look at the number of emerging researchers, there's quite a big group now that is coming through the pipeline. So the picture will change, but of course it will change with the support of all of us, ensuring that we put, you know, the funding where it's supposed to go, so that we can really change that landscape. Thank you.
Chairperson, I think we have responded to all the questions that were raised.
Yes.
So let me hand over then to the Honourable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee.
Yeah. No, thank you very much to the Portfolio Committee Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Nilwamondo,
and Dr. Owoko. I have seen the I'm just trying to see what members are saying in the group, in the on the chat.
Okay.
All right. Nothing that was addressed. We did see the CFO space. Yes, we did see you. I had seen a hand. I'm not sure if it was from Honorable Lucia or Honorable Matati, but I'm not sure if it was a legacy hand or the hand that went up afterwards. Can I just double check? Honorable Lucia, your hand is still up. Is this a legacy hand or a new hand?
No, it was a legacy. I removed it now.
Okay. All right. So I'd then like to assume that members have, well, the comments and questions that were raised to members have been responded to. And therefore we can conclude our deliberations with the National Research Foundation, sorry, Fund. Thank you very much, colleagues, for availing yourselves this morning. We truly appreciate it, and we truly appreciate the work that you do. Continue to do the amazing work that you do. It's very essential, and it plays really a critical part in the transformation and development that we want to see in our country. Colleagues, it's 12:40, and so we are behind schedule in terms of when we're supposed to break for lunch or generally to break. I'd like to propose that it's 12:40, so I'd like to propose that we take a break until 1 o'clock. So from 1 o'clock, we will then move into the presentation of the South African National Space Agency and the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research. We'll take both those presentations at once, and then we will deal with the questions after that. Thank you very much. We can take a lunch break, a break. I don't know what people will do with this couple of minutes, but we'll meet again at 1 o'clock. Thank you so much.
Recording stopped.